welcome to this week's edition of the Rocket World Ghost Podcast. This week we're happy to have Shannon Larkin, a member of Godsmack, who are on tour. They're coming to the Hard Rock Casino in Gary, Indiana on April 20th. Shannon, welcome. Glad to have you.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
So you're at home, I'm guessing?
I am. Sitting in my kitchen having coffee.
Yeah. When they said 10 a.m., I'm like, well, you always think musicians aren't going to be up this damn early.
Yeah, it's funny. When I'm home, I am up early because I got all my yard work and I have all these turtles and koi fish and my home life. And it's a completely different life than the road life, in which I try and stay up till 3-4 in the morning so that I can sleep until 12-1 in the afternoon, because it seems like on tour it's a big hurry up and wait game. If I wake up at 8-9 in the morning, man, I don't have anything really, and maybe a couple interviews or a sound check at 3 or 4, but most of the day is just sitting around like hurrying up and waiting for the reason I'm out there, which is the show at 9 p.m. or whatever. So it's a sleep late thing on tour and a get up early thing at home for me.
So what area is home these days?
I live in Southwest Florida. Okay. It's beautiful. Man, all it's right. Gorgeous.
You were born in Chicago, correct?
I was. I was born in Chicago, but I didn't live in Chicago for long. I was like 3 and a half when we moved. But I do have my very, very first memory in life was in Chicago. But my dad was an engineer, and so he would take these jobs that some of them would be, say, 6 months, but some would be 2 years or something. And so he would sign these contracts in which he had to work on a project that was a time limited thing or whatever. And so I was born in Chicago. My sister was born in Detroit. And then I ended up, when my grandfather died, I ended up in West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, at the age of 7. And so I tell people I grew up in West Virginia because from 7 to when I moved out at 18, those I think are your formative years, and that like forms your personality. So I'm a West Virginian.
Gotcha. You were talking about how you do things differently on tours, and you've certainly been doing it long enough to know, how things go and to definitely get your schedule set accordingly. Can you believe it's been 20 years with Godsmack?
Man, that's crazy to me. It really has flown by. I've been doing this. I played my first club when I was 12, and my parents had to come for the next couple years. And I've only been in 4 bands. I've never worked a day job, never punched a clock. I started playing, touring when I was 16. So I've toured for 40 years in the matrix, musical matrix of this business of, make record, release record, tour, make record, release record, tour, repeat. And it's been 40 years that I've been doing that, if you can believe that.
Yeah, I know, I can believe it, man. It's just, that's really awesome that music has just been your life, because that's rare.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I always tell people that, because people talk about, and I have many friends, that are so talented, and they didn't have the success or make it, in this business or whatever. And it's as much luck as it is talent, And I've been super lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how things used to work before modern times. Is like, certain types of music would kind of bubble up, and then like you'd have like a whole collection of bands or artists or whatever that would kind of, you know, hit at one moment, a certain kind of vibe or sound would hit. And nowadays it's like, it's, you know, it's the, especially with rock music, it's such a different landscape than it was when, you know, even when Godsmack first hit. What is it like out there now as a touring performer playing rock music? You know, obviously people still like rock music. It's just, it's not considered, I guess, fashionable anymore, you know, to the masses.
That's true. And, you know, America is a very trendy country for the greatest example, of course, is Seattle coming, and Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Mother Love, and all these bands came and pretty much wiped out all the rock that was happening, and, you know, mostly LA rock, Motley Crue, Poison, Warrant, all those bands got completely, their careers completely ruined, destroyed by this new style, because the whole country just jumped on it. And then kind of all the original, like, I guess they called it hair metal or whatever these bands were.
Yeah, yeah.
They all got just like literally couldn't sell tickets or records anymore when this new style came. Where, you know, in Europe, they're pretty faithful, and they'll of course jump on the new sound or whatever,
right.
But they still seem to retain, you know, their loyalty and their love for their favorite bands and stuff. But the music scape has certainly, gosh, streaming really changed everything for us, man. But see, you know, being my, I'm 56, you know, I've been there, like I said, touring for 40 years, and I've been through all the like changes in the music business. And, you know, that most of it, you know, you have to embrace something like the internet, where, my God, now, you know, like I can release side projects I do, you know, I can release these things myself now. You don't really need a record label and, you know, management and booking agents and all that stuff.
Yeah.
If you want to just release music, you know, for people to hear, if you don't care
right.
about sales and all that kind of stuff, you know. But the game has certainly changed. It's a crazy, crazy world now. I can't imagine being a band starting out, because I came up in the era of, my God, you had to play, man. You had to play the clubs. You had to start packing them in, and you had to get the labels out to see you. You know what I mean? And now it's like, if you have X amount of hits on your site, then the labels will listen to your demo. And so, you know, new bands coming up, I feel like it's, I don't know if it'd be harder or easier, honestly, you know? But I do think that they will miss the importance of having to go and play every night, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think a big thing that's happened is that there's, you know, there's no longer like tastemakers. There's nobody at the entrance to anything. There's, you know, there's not like the cool radio stations that have like a cool programmer that say, okay, well, this sounds great. Let's promote this. Like, you know, I mean, radio stations used to break artists, despite what even the record labels wanted. They would play like, you know, the tracks that even the record labels said, well, we don't want you to play that track. Well, we like this track, so we're playing it. And then that would break out. And it's like, you know, or like a Rolling Stone, the field is so wide open right now that there's so many choices that it's almost too hard. Unless you're got, you know, a major engine behind you, to get kind of noticed on a bigger level. But there's all this music that's out there, which is its own good thing, I suppose. And there's certainly rock bands tour and do well touring, you know, that's for sure. I'm sure you guys wouldn't tour if you weren't doing well at it.
Well, yeah. And like last year, you know, we were talking about the climate is the only reason I'm bringing this up, not to brag or whatever. But last year for Godsmack, we sold more tickets, made more money, sold more t-shirts than in our whole, that last year was our most successful year ever.
Wow.
If you can believe that. We were on the, we toured for almost 8 months last year, you know, and you know, so there's people, you know, that are still going out to concerts and, you know, our fans, it's strange, you know, our fans have grown. We're a 25 year band now, you know, 21 of which I've been there, and our fans have grown with us. So, you know, 20 years ago, I was 36, and our fans might have been, you know, 5-6 years younger than me even. So now they're in their late 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And so typically with a band like us that has decades under their belt of success in this business, you know, they're at the end of the day when we're at our age, why I feel we did better last year than we ever did is because a lot of the people, a lot of the folks that first discovered us, you know, they're in high school or college at the time. And then they graduate or not or whatever and get a job and life happens. They meet somebody, they have a family. Then as a human, you kind of, you know, family becomes first.
Yeah.
And so you don't go out, you don't spend money on a bunch of records and shirts or whatever, your rock band. Rock becomes kind of secondary. It's something that you might listen to on your radio on the way to work, or on the weekends you're jamming out, you know, with your friends over the barbecue or whatever. But it does, you know, when you're young, it's something that's super, like you'll say, oh, you know, Godsmack's coming next month, and you'll get your tickets and you're excited for that whole month leading up to the concert. And
yeah.
You know, that's the era we, you and I probably grew up in. But, you know, nowadays it's changed so much in that, you know, everybody goes on and they could see the whole concert after the first night. And so, yeah. You know, like I tell my friends on this new tour, we're doing this Vibes tour right now. And I'm like, please don't go online and just watch our show, because I want you to, you know, come in, you know, see what we're opening with. Like, you know, have wonderment and awe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Over music, the way it used to be. And so, but, you know, so as far as like, I guess the business, you know, there's money to be made but the whole point I was making about our fans growing old with us is like, once their kids grow up and out,
right.
So say that's 18, 20 years later, now you have, you know, typically a man and a woman, and, you know, they've raised kids, they used to rock out a lot. All of a sudden they'll see a band like Godsmack or Disturbed or somebody that's been around for a long time that they used to go and rock out to. And now their kids are, say, in college or out and working or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a nostalgia thing, you know. And so they're like, wow, man, Godsmack's coming. Jeez, we haven't seen them in 20 years. Let's go see them, or 15
yeah.
years, whatever. And so they'll go out and now, you know, they have more money than they had. So now
yeah.
they'll buy a couple shirts maybe, and they can afford these ridiculous ticket prices, you know what I mean? So I feel like, you know, we're at that nostalgia kind of point in our career, you know?
Yeah.
And which is nice, you know, and that's why we had said last record and all that stuff. It wasn't because we didn't like making records or whatever, but it's mainly like, God, you know, and you mentioned rock radio. Shit. We wouldn't have made it without rock radio. Rock radio has been our, that's what has made this band. And so, you know, and so all they like our favorite shows still are like Radio Fest and stuff, you know, where, you know, the people that are in the crowd, they listen to the radio. And so they know our songs, you know?
Yeah.
But it is a weird, really weird place for music right now. And, you know, I don't know what the trend is even, you know, maybe I'm out of touch, you know, cause we've been touring but I don't even know what's hot.
It's, really... you know, it basically the stuff that's popular to me sounds basically the same as it did the last 20 years in terms of pop and all that stuff. None of it, I'm not saying there's not good music out there. I'm just talking about what's like hot. And it's not much of it sounds different from what it did before. I feel like I hear the same type of song all the damn time. And I don't know what it is. I don't. It's like music is popular. Music is stuck in this weird loop. You know, that it's not even all the same artists. It's just the same kind of. Nobody's singing about anything more than what they've been singing about for 20 years. You know, going out and partying and all that. You know, it's like. I mean, I don't know. It's just that popular music hasn't evolved. Music has, but not popular music for some reason. And I
now,
don't know
I'll
what,
tell you why. I'll tell you why. At least I have a theory.
Yeah.
Why? And it's because after the 70s and this pure era of creativity, you know, with these musicians, and it, at the time, you know, you had Floyd and Bowie and Zeppelin and Sabbath and all these bands that were really original, and they were really coming with a new sound, and so what happens is then the radio and probably the label owners, I don't know, the industry folks, all the issues and ties, we call them in the bands. You know, these cats, they want everything monetized, right? And so after in the 80s and with the advent of MTV and real money that they saw they could make from the public, they started basically telling us musicians and artists that, you know, we need a 3.5 minute song. And so the format now to get on the radio was 3.5 minute songs. And, you know, you're coming from a place where like Queen and, you know, Peter Frampton with Do You Feel Like We Do, whatever. We have hits that are 5 to 10 minutes long, certain songs. Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven, biggest radio song ever, right? That thing's like 9 minutes or something, right? And Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, whatever. These are game-changing songs that were nothing but original, came right from these artists' souls. So, you know, but the radio wanted to commercialize everything to an extent that if you give them a 3.5 minute song, you're not going to get played. So you'd have to do this edit, or in the worst case scenario, which is what bands started doing, is writing for the radio, writing songs specifically for the radio to get on the radio. And so with a lot of bands, you could have, you know, a couple songs on the record that you could tell were for the radio, i.e. sound like everything else that's being put out. And then, you know, the rest of the record might have some originality or depth to it. But, you know, in the end, I'm with David Bowie on that. You know, you should never create music for other people. Yeah. You want to create music for what comes out of you for yourself. And if other people like it, fine. You know what I mean? Then you can get success that way. But music should be personal. Music should be something that's meaningful, that's important, right? It's important. And so, like you said about the lyrical themes of today and stuff, you know, there, it seems like in the rap game is where people will talk about what's going on politically in the world, where it used to be rock and roll, man. You know, we carried the flag from Bob Dylan on about bringing up social injustices or whatever, and God knows there's plenty of them today out there right now. It's the worst that this country's ever been, right? So, but you don't really see anything. All you hear about is Puff Daddy, you know, and all this bullshit, that social media bullshit to me. And it seems like the music itself has become less important, you know? And if you do want to be successful, then you got to go and sound like everybody else. And so that's why when you say you listen to the radio, whether it's pop, rock, country, guess what? It all sounds the same. So like, the labels back in the 70s, when they were looking for an artist to sign, and you know, there was what was called A&R, artist repertoire guys, and they didn't sign these people. And like now, you know, if your first record doesn't sell, if you take a deal from a major or whatever, you're going to get dropped. You get one shot and that's it. Where back in the day, they did what's called, you know, artist growth, and their main thing back then was to try and get the artist successful by their third record, right? And so they could have time to find the essence of this artist and find the real talent. And so now you know, all that's out the window. There's no artist development. It's if you got enough hits, we'll sign you. If the record sells, it sells. If it doesn't, you're gone, you know, like a distant memory. And
yeah.
It's kind of sad, really. And also, back then, the labels were actually looking for bands that were different and sounded original and had something special, right? Where now they're looking for what sounds like what's on the radio. So everything
yeah.
ends up remaining in this vicious loop of sounding the same. And it's excuse my French, it's fucking boring, man. You know, that, to me, the musical landscape today. I mean, do you agree? I'm not trying to diss music either, but it's hard to find original acts that don't sound like everything else. And the radio, it all sounds the same.
Yeah, I think I think what you were saying is true, is that, you know, basically labels are just looking for more of the same. And I think the labels always had a lot of control because they had the money, but they control things far more now because they screwed up. They missed the bus on the internet, you know, back in the Napster days, and they could have figured it out early. But they, you know, they kept wanting to push their, you know, however much CDs are or used to be. I mean, I haven't bought a CD in forever. You know, because people were buying whole albums for like one or two songs and they were feeling basically ripped off. So now they you know, they were even doing, I don't know how popular they are now, but they were doing all those 360 deals and, you know,
yeah.
trying to get in on bands' tour profits and all that crap. It's like, you know, they just
Yeah.
screwed up. So now they just control everything. And that's the biggest problem with streaming, is that the labels own stakes in these streamers. So
Yeah.
They have no incentive to pay artists more, you know, per stream, because why? They're making money. Who cares about the artist?
Yeah, so it's like the same old shit, right? Like, you know, we hear about from back in B.B. King and all, you know, the greats, you know, they were, it's always Elvis Presley, you know, what's his name, took 50% of it. You know, it's
Oh,
always, the artist is always the last guy that they think about in this industry, you know, that's owned by a bunch of elites, you know what I mean, that are billionaire or millionaire billionaires. And you know, and then so people, you know, they got to understand that, you know, especially the young kids coming up, that, you know, you just have to make your music. And if you, I feel nowadays, there is one positive to it all. And that is these labels, you know, the big three or whatever, they're going to become dinosaurs. And pretty soon they're not even going to be necessary.
Right.
If they're even necessary now, like you can put your own records out now.
Right.
Spend less than $400. You can put your album that you made in your garage on iTunes. Right. And iTunes will take it and accept it for like $380 or whatever. And then there's your record sitting right beside Led Zeppelin 2 or whatever,
Right,
you know.
right,
It
right.
doesn't have to be on Universal, Atlantic, or whatever the majors are left, you know. There's only like three of them left anyway.
Right.
But you know, so, and to use the machine, the labels, I'm not like disrespecting these major labels, because they've been very kind to Godsmack in our career. You know, we had Universal many years on Universal, were great. BMG is a great label for us, you know. But that said, you know, we made it in 98 on Universal,
right,
when records were selling. The first
right.
Godsmack sold 5 million copies, you know what I mean? Our last record was our most successful record. The one before that was our most commercially successful record. It didn't sell no 5 million copies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just does not happen anymore, you know? And so, you know, the streaming thing, by the way, I think it's a wonderful thing. I use all these streaming services. I couldn't believe when they came out with something that you can find any song, I don't care what it is, you know, any song on the planet at your fingertips, right on your
yeah.
phone. I thought, yeah, it's brilliant. But then, so, you know, I we voted for Obama, you know what I mean? I did twice. And so just like any other job, musicians have a union. Ours is called the SAG-AFTRA Union. It's the Screen Actors Guild, and it's the American Federation of TV and Radio Artists, right? And so our unions are the ones that have our back, and they're supposed to watch out for any kind of misdoings and misdealings and blah, blah, blah. And so when the streaming came out, and the big three, Spotify, Apple, and iTunes, and these big three companies came out and said, well, you know, with the advent of the iCloud and streaming, we can, and they're geniuses. We can make these companies, and we can sell for $9.99 a month every song in the world, right? And so, here a couple years had passed, and I think it was almost 2 years past of Obama's first run. That's when streaming was invented, and next thing you know. You know, we're all looking at Spotify and Pandora and these iTunes, the big three, and there's our music, all of our records, all on it. And so we know that now these are billion-dollar corporations just after 2 years, because if you look at $9.99 a month times the world and how many hundreds of millions of people who are subscribing, they became billion-dollar corporations, right? And so as musicians, we are sort of saying, hold on. All right, I'm in Godsmack, for instance. You know, now I got six, at the time, five records, six records, whatever it was, up on Spotify that everybody owns for $9.99, right? But we're not getting a cent of that, and that's not fair. It's that we wrote the music. And so we went to, you know, the union, and the union goes to Capitol Hill, and they're trying to get a law established that at least gives the artist some kind of publishing for streaming, right? It just wasn't fair. And for 8 years of Obama, we couldn't even get the bill to him or to on his desk. And so nothing happened. And then that dude, Donald J. Trump, became our president of this nation. And him, he had a show, you know, in which he said, you're fired or whatever. So he held a SAG card, which is our union, right? And so within, I know it was in the first year of that Donald Trump guy's presidency, there he is in the office with Willie Nelson and Kanye West and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and he's signing what's called the Music Modernization Act. And that allowed us musicians and songwriters to get a little bit of scratch, which we deserve for the songs we wrote. Right. Yeah. And so, but then the part that's screwed up about it is that, you know, so a group of people, of elites, you know, sat in a room and decided how much percentage we get. Right. And they decided somehow that 25, as of now, 2,500 streams equals one sale.
Right.
And that's not fair. That's not fair.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, somebody like Snoop Dogg, he's looking at, you know, 100 million streams or something, and he's like, yeah, and I made, you know, $600,000, which is a lot of money,
but right?
For 100 million people listening to my song, that's nothing, yeah. And it's not fair. So that's all we're looking for now.
Well, yeah, because the radio equivalent is there's a certain amount of money for one song played, you know, on regular
right.
radio. So you don't know. I mean, they have ways to say, well, so many, however many are listening, but they don't get, I don't think they have it broken down for, you know, every song, how many people are listening at that moment. So there's no telling if 5,000 people are listening at that moment or 50,000 people are, you know, it's like, so there needs to be, yeah, there needs, I didn't realize about SAG-AFTRA actually representing you guys. I always wondered why there wasn't a stronger push, because musicians are still complaining. I mean, I talked to an artist a couple of years ago, Tanya Donnelly, who was in Belly and Throwing Muses. And, you know, they were trying to get their music off of Spotify because they weren't really, you know, they didn't really feel like it was fair. And, you know, you got this, whatever, I don't even know who owns Spotify now, either Edgar Bromfin or something, somebody from Sweden or something. And you know, the corporations, do this a lot. They talk about how they made record profits, but then they claim that they don't have any money to pay artists for things.
Yeah.
You know, like that, like Netflix, you know, that Netflix makes all this money, but they don't want to, you know, they were kind of not willing to really, they don't really want to pay writers to create the stuff that they put on their, you know, it's a typical thing. I mean, the artist always, you know, gets screwed. Even though that bill went through, you guys still aren't making the money, you know, you should for the work you did. You know, and meanwhile, the label gets so much money from it, and they made a record. They put, you know, however much, $50,000 towards an album back in whatever. But then they, you know, they do that typical corporate accounting. Well, we paid for the video. You know, we did this. You know, and then they, you know, what was that Eddie Murphy movie back in the 80s where the guy had the idea, they sued Paramount, and Paramount acted like they did, it made like $500 million. They acted like they didn't make any money off of it, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, just that's corporate mentality, man. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And when it's like, and when you look at who owns everything, that's when it gets scary, because it's like, you're right. You know, the labels are the same people that own Spotify, that own Pandora, and it's, you know, they got in there late, but in the end, again, you know, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but the elitists own everything.
Yeah.
And it's just like the same people that sell you shampoo that destroys your scalp and makes your hair fall out. Well, they're the same people that own Rogaine. So it's the same thing as, you know, I forget who said it, but it was a brilliant deduction on war. It's like, if the people that are fighting are the same people that are making the weapons, then something's not right, you know. So we're going to start a war, but we're the ones making the weapons, you know. Well, obviously somebody has to buy the weapon,
right?
So why is there a war? Is it really because of strife or conflict, or is it because of money? And so war is money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these are just my beliefs.
No, you know, the thing is it's obvious that corporate America used to want to obviously make a profit. That's understandable. That's why America is great. Is capitalism is, in its essence, not a horrible thing. It's just that it's been bastardized and taken advantage of, where now you have so many people without, and so few people with.
That's so true, man. Spoken well. That's the truth. And it's, you know, the middle class, it's us that are getting hurt here, you know. Yeah. And it seems like, they even our poor now are suffering too with this, the open borders and all this bullshit that's going on in our country. It's a really weird time. This year is going to be a life-changing year, you know, depending on what happens in November, you know.
Yeah. And maybe we don't even agree necessarily about certain issues, but I mean, there's certainly a problem, you know, in a lot of ways that somebody needs to fix, but I don't feel like anybody running anything necessarily wants to fix anything. I mean, look at, you know, we can't even pass a year-long budget anymore.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, what are we even doing? I mean, how are we going to get anything done if we can't pass a budget? You know?
Yeah, right? And like open borders, that one to me, I don't care, Republican, Democrat, I don't give a shit. It's like, if you don't have a border, you don't have a country. And so, and we've never opened our border. It doesn't make sense. Like, it's almost as if there's somebody out there or a group trying to hurt our country, you know?
Yeah,
and it's not China. It's not China. It's in here. It's in us.
Yeah.
That's the problem. So, you know, like I said, I don't care if it's, could be Robert Kennedy Jr., you know, some independent, whoever it is, something's going to give, something's going to happen. And, you know, hopefully, I'm not going to say hopefully, I know. That, because I love America, man. I'm American, that baby. That's that. And I will never leave this country. I'm not one of these guys, like, I don't know, Tommy Lee or whatever. I'm leaving the country if Trump gets. I don't give a shit. I want this country fixed. I don't have anything personal against Donald Trump or Joe Biden or any of these assholes. You know, they're all politicians. So, but I do at my age and in my financial bracket or whatever, I understand the economy and I understand our country running smoothly. And it's not. And it was before the pandemic. And so there was a couple good years. Everything was looking good. Now, the fact that it was that Trump dude in there, well, I don't care. Whatever it was, I saw our country running smooth. And the pandemic happened, whether that was unfortunate or whether that was designed by some, you know, secret government or but whatever the conspiracy. I don't care about that either. I just know it happened. It happened and it hurt our country. And then somehow, you know, this Biden guy who can barely speak got in office and our country's bad now. And, you know, people that vote for Biden, I got nothing against them either. It's simply, don't they feel it when they go to the gas station? I just went to groceries. My groceries were 150 more a cart than they were, you know, before I got off tour 2 months ago. And it's not stopping, you know.
Well, there you go again. That's another corporate thing because the people are still acting like supply lines are slowed. It's like, well, how we've been open. So what is it that corporate America is doing? What they're doing is they're just screwing us for as long as they can because of using the excuses of the pandemic.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, I mean, by now we shouldn't have to pay so much for certain things, but I don't know how you put corporate America's feet to the fire, you know, exactly. You know,
that's
exactly.
The thing. That's the thing. How do you fight the corporate America? And so, you know, I saw this interesting thing online for what this is worth. It was some guy, some dude, just like us, right? But he was saying, you know, if we as Americans, all of us could somehow organize and get together and everybody go out and just buy 2 weeks worth of supplies, your bread, milk, cheese, your gas, everything that you would need. And then, as one, we all say, we're not going to work today. We're not buying anything from anybody.
Yeah.
And all of us sit at home for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And this guy claimed that in the first week, they will lose so many trillions of dollars from everybody in the country agreeing just to not spend a dime on any of your shit, right? And then after week two, they will bring their prices down and inflation will stop because they're making nothing.
Yeah.
And they know, and we have the power. That's the thing, you know, people, I think our younger generation, I sound like an old man, our younger generation, they, you know, they think that we work for the government and it's the opposite. They work for us. You know,
right.
If you knew how much money that I lost last year to our tax system in this bracket that I'm in, you know, especially last year with us being on the road working constantly and making dough. Oh my God, dude. And every penny of that I know went to Ukraine, a country that I've been to. And I know the situation over there. It's not right. And meanwhile, again, we got, God, our homeless people here in America. I toured the country last year. And when you tour the country in a bus, by the way, it's very personal. And you're seeing all these, every city. I went through every state besides Alaska and Hawaii last year. And, you know, outside our cities, like to make it look like our cities are clean, you know, they're moving all the homeless folks that are cities, tent cities now around every city, Milwaukee, St. Louis, LA, of course, New York, all these, we've been everywhere last year. And Tony and my guitar player and I, we'd sit in the back of the bus. And so with tour buses, we don't go, we stay in hotels downtown. And so our bus will stop outside of town, several miles outside the city, to gas up and all that. Well, in most of these places, they have hired security, even at the gas stations, because of all the tent cities around all the But they moved them out of the city. So you go to Seattle, oh, it looks beautiful downtown. Guess what? Go all the exits around before you get in the city, and that's now where you'll see all their homeless.
Yeah.
Thousands, yeah. Thousands of them, American people.
Yeah.
That are living on the streets and have no, they're destitute people. So what, and I don't want to be, you know, cruel, but what do we care about a war that's going on halfway across the world? How did we get involved? Yeah.
Well, I will say, the only thing I'll say to that, and I think the thing about America is that we're the nation that has been typically known to be the harbinger of light.
I'm doing an interview.
Harbinger of light everywhere. And with Ukraine specifically, easy for me to say, the worry generally is for the rest of Europe, based on how Putin's aspirations seem to be. He seems to want to get back to the USSR. He wants to, you know, envelop Poland and Czechoslovakia and all. You know, it seems like that's his desire. So, the deal there is to try to help our NATO allies. You know, in terms of, you know, and I get it. It's hard because there's just not enough being done. Even look at, here's an example of America's downfall in terms of what it should be doing. We spend half of our budget, nearly $1 trillion, on defense, but our veterans need outside groups constantly to help them in need. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wounded warriors, whatever. You know, and we're told by our politicians to you know, support our troops, but our government won't support our troops after they've fought for us.
That's you right. Know? And they're living, and most of our homeless,
and they're
on
living,
the street.
Yeah, they're homeless. So, yeah. You know, what does that say? Like, we spend all this money on defense, but we can't support our, you know, the people that fight for us? That ain't
and,
right.
You know, again, back to the conspiracy shit, this thing, you know, this stuff started in the 50s and 60s, you know, and of this world where we somehow became the world police. And it was probably when we became the world currency, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just, again, when our streets are overrun, I mean, my friend Rick Allen, he drums for Def Leppard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he started the Raven Drum Foundation because he became an American citizen some 20, 30 years ago.
Okay.
And moved to L.A. And over the last couple decades, he just watched this homeless problem.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
he found out that 75 to 80% of the homeless folks are our own, you know, veterans of that fought for our country, risked their lives for our country. So
yeah.
Rick Allen started the Raven Drum Foundation 2 or 3 years ago, and we've raised tons. I've been involved with it, and we've raised shit tons of money for our veterans to try and get them off the streets. Meanwhile, I send, you know, $100,000 to Ukraine last year for their border. And so I'm just saying, it's not.
Well, the thing is that we should be able to do different things. The problem is, how is that money being spent, really? Is it really being spent on the things that it says it is, or is it being wasted somewhere? Is somebody doing some sort of bet? You know, because politicians are typically corrupt.
They are corrupt. They're all corrupt.
You know, we got this guy, the Democratic senator from New Jersey, that's, you know, being investigated right now. And he, you know, I mean, well, there's a couple of different politicians being investigated for several things, which, you know, and so that, and that has, you know, there's one on one side and there's one on another. So it's not a, it's a politician thing, not a Democrat or Republican thing, but, you know,
I just believe that, you know, with the Putin, you know, if you look back at how the USSR, you know, came apart and what America and our politicians at that time had agreed with Putin, and this was pre-Zelensky, right? So with Ukraine.
Yeah.
And all Putin really wanted, you know, was that his borders. He would let Czechoslovakia, Ukraine, gosh, all those countries that happened when the USSR split up.
Yeah.
And they became Russia, and Putin took power. And all he wanted was to not have to worry about NATO coming and trying to wage war, right? And he lost 20, he lost one third when he let Ukraine go from the USSR to prevent a war, basically. And not just between those two countries, he let them go as well as Poland and everybody else. Well, you know, they have the warm water ports. And so you got to remember, Ukraine was part of the USSR.
Oh, yeah.
And so one third of their income came from these warm water ports. And it was the only way they can deal and sell oil and buy oil, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, and so Putin made a deal with America and NATO. Everybody signed this deal saying that they wouldn't move NATO within, you know, the ex country of Russia, and that they would have a percentage of the warm water ports. Well, I guess when Zelensky came in, you know, they took away all the warm water ports, which is one third of Russia's economy. And when I was in Kyiv talking to the promoter, Tony and I, he was telling us that this was in 2018, and there had been tanks lined up on their border for 3 years already that Putin had lined up on the border, ready to come in should they break their deal that they made. And they not only when Zelensky came in, who's a puppet anyway, he's not even a politician, he's an actor, but he comes in, and whoever was pulling the strings immediately took away the port and immediately started making moves with NATO, right? And so I guess my point is, But I don't know why we're involved anyway, is my stance as an American. I don't think we should be the world police. I think BRICS is going to happen, and our currency, we're not going to be the world currency anymore, by the way. You know, you got Russia, you got China, you got South America, India, Saudi Arabia. Everybody's joining this new currency, and it's going to be it's going to have greater value than the American dollar, and we're not going to be the world's wealth. Like right now, Russia, to spend their rubles on money with Saudi Arabia, they have to convert their money to American dollars, right? And you know, that's going to change probably. But we're going to be okay. I hope it changes, because America, we don't need the Middle East. We have enough oil. We have more oil under Alaska than Saudi Arabia and Iran or Iraq put together, by the way. And people talk about, you know, all the global warming and all that shit. Well, if we're buying our oil from them, they're drilling, they're doing all that shit anyway. So what's all the difference is what I'm saying. Well, I feel, you know, just my opinion, we need to get rid of the Middle East and all that shit and become our own country. It's all going to be one world order soon, someday. They're saying by 2030 or something, you know. But my point is, I think about Putin, and, you know, people will probably not like this, but, you know, I'm 56. We've been raised in a country that's, you know, kill a commie for mommy, you know, better dead than red. We've been taught all our lives that the Russians are the bad guys, you know. But the truth is I've walked the streets of Moscow several times. I've walked the streets of St. Petersburg. You know, the only difference that I could see is that the cops have machine guns in their hands. But I never once saw any kind of violence. And when I was in the subways in Moscow alone, walking around, I like to do that on days off in cities. You know, there was anti-Putin propaganda for sale at these booths, even. And there's a cop right there with a machine gun. And so they teach us to believe that Russia and communism. Listen, I'm all about American capitalism. Communism sucks. I would die first than be a commie under these. But being in these countries, it's not the way they've brainwashed us to believe. And the people over there are super. We went out to dinner. We went to malls. We went, like I said, I rode the subway. Went down to the Red Square. All this shit. All it is they're people just like us, except for they have a different social hierarchy because of communism. But they still are normal people that love food and music and humans. And, everybody dresses nicer. Everybody seems to care more about, just like what Sully and I went to a grocery store, man. We walk in this grocery store and we saw all these hot chicks and these dudes in dapper clothes. And we're like, wow. So they dressed up even to go to the grocery store here. It's not like they walk outside. Like if I go to the grocery store, there's going to be, or Walmart, Jesus, that's another nightmare. Anyway, people, it's just, it's different in Russia, man. And they're not bad people. They have a different political regime is all. And they don't want to take over the world. They make it seem like he's Gorbachev or something. I don't know.
I think the biggest thing that people forget, and this happens with any, and that even happens to us being viewed, is that most of the time, whatever is happening in any country's government is generally opposed by the citizens. So when I say that I don't trust Russia necessarily, it's not that I don't trust Russian people. I don't trust the government. I don't trust Putin. I don't trust he's a crafty, sneaky. So, I mean, he just killed somebody else that, you know, wronged him in his views. And I'm not saying we don't, you know, it's all a bunch of hypocrisy when we say, well, he killed someone. Well, Lord knows how many people we've killed. I mean, the only conspiracy theory I believe in is that we killed our own president with Kennedy.
Yeah,
that's the only one, because I think there's too much evidence to say that this was just, you know, Oswald, you know, in that case. I have a lot of problems believing most other conspiracies, just because, especially as we get we're in the modern age of the internet.
The Luciferian one, right?
That's, because people will come up with just about anything nowadays. It's like, come on, now you're just, there's plenty of things to be upset about. We don't need to invent things.
Yeah. Yeah. And but, I mean, some of them are really, you know, about my industry, for instance, you know, like, with the Luciferian, you know, Satanism thing, and it shows, like, you know, all these artists, and, you know, I'm hard pressed to believe some of these, that the Clintons were drinking, you know, the children's blood, and there's some funny good ones out there, but a lot of them, man, I gotta think, and again, I heard someone that said this, and I went, well, but I think it was Joe Rogan or somebody, but conspiracy theories all start from somewhere, you know, that they don't just come out of thin air. So there's something behind.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Like if we could zero in on the actual goings on instead of elevating it to something like the Clintons drinking blood of young virgins or whatever. I mean, that stuff doesn't help any of us. It's like, 'cause it's laughable and it's stupid. But there are real things. Like I personally don't really trust the Clintons. I don't know why specifically. I don't have any tangible things, but I don't trust them, and that's fine. What I want to do is, because we've been talking for a while, we kind of went sidetracked, and I appreciate I get the feeling that you and I maybe see things differently, but I appreciate the fact that I can talk to you and still have, and we have opposing views perhaps. And I feel like you're somebody that's very informed. So I appreciate that too, because the problem in our country is that a lot of people believe something, but they don't, somebody goes, well, why do you believe that? I'm like, I don't know.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like, you got to know why you believe something, you know, or shut up. You know, it's like.
Yeah, man. And
you're just
perpetuating. I live in California. I lived in California, dude, for like 10 years. Had my kid there. I was married there. All that. And I got a lot of friends, you know, from living there for a decade. And and my God, that when this division, our country literally got divided by these assholes, man. And I saw, you know, friends of mine that took a different path that I believed or whatever politically, that didn't want to talk to me anymore.
Yeah.
Because of who I was supporting, you know, Trump. I'll say it. I. Like, again, I don't care if he said he wants to grab somebody's pussy or what. I don't care. That was 30 years ago. What I do care about is our country and especially our veterans or whatever. And so I understand he's an asshole. But those first 2 years, you can't argue. And that made me believe that the pandemic, I think it was China, you know, I don't know. But I look at Trump like, man, if somebody gets attacked this hard, they're really scared of this dude getting in and to be our president. And so to me, that's scary. You talk about the Clintons and you don't know why you don't trust them. Well, when the Clintons came into the White House, they had $1.2 million, right?
Yeah.
He was a governor, so they had some dough. When they left the White House, they had over $100 million.
Oh, yeah, hey, yeah, for sure.
Book deals, same thing with the Obamas. Book deals and all that shit, hey.
Well, that happened. That's natural. Everybody gets a book deal. Yeah.
Yeah, but the math doesn't add up. At a book deal, I know. I'm in a band that sells millions of records. I know how it is. Yeah. If you sell millions of books, it's the same thing. You don't make $100 million.
No, I agree. I there's always, you know, but that's
they're corrupt, kind of, corrupt.
That's the way it goes. Yeah.
They're corrupt. And the Bushes, I'm not talking Democrats. I'm not being a Republican here. I voted for Obama twice, by the way. Yeah. I'm saying it's not just the Republicans, the Bush administration, all that, you know, the weapons of mass destruction not being there. They're all just corrupt, man. And I don't want to be a total negative. That's why earlier I tried to be a positive person. And earlier I said, hey, I think that I believe in them and love America. And I think our country's going to tune itself in and fix itself. But I think the world's going to change too, you know, especially with the advent of BRICS and this new world order. But, you know, as far as it goes, man, I our country, I believe, is going to be okay, and we're going to be okay. And the friends
that
I
lost. I think it's a growing thing. I think we need to evolve beyond what's happening right now. I think that's the deal.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I want to say that I'm as hopeful as you are, and if we ever met, I'd love to sit down and chat some more, honestly, about this, because I think you're unlike a lot of people, and I consider myself a Democratic leaning independent, because I personally feel like the Republicans want to go back in time to some other era when, you know, it's the whole thing. But I'm not a progressive either, because I mean, I'm progressive in, I like the idea of change. I just think that what progressives worry about takes away from what all of us as Americans need to worry about. That's my feeling. You know, I voted Republican in the past. My grandfather was a World War II vet, and he was a Republican. I don't know if he'd be a Republican today necessarily. I don't think he'd be a Democrat, that's for sure. But I think there's a lot of us in the middle that don't really have any allegiance to either side, and we're being ignored.
We're being like, we're also being like almost ridiculed, you know,
right.
Like and it's because of this. I think the extreme hatred for the man, Donald Trump. I mean, if you look at the policies and everything, I mean, come on, you know, he was building a wall to close our borders. And then, you know, when the Biden came in, he opened our borders. And look what that did. Jesus.
I will say that wasn't
smart, right? To open up.
Well, I will say one thing that I'll be honest, because we're talking, we're honest here. I have never liked Donald Trump. I didn't like him as a person. I mean, I remember hearing him back on the Stern Show back in the 90s and thinking he was a fucking idiot asshole.
Me too.
And on his TV show, he was easily he was the worst thing on his TV show. He didn't seem to know what was going on. And I with a fierce ferocity, just despise him more as a person now and as a politician. I'm not saying it, like I say this about certain people. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. There were a couple few things done. Now, you brought to my attention the one thing he signed into law about the, you know, residuals for musicians. I think that's a good thing. There were a couple other good things, but they happened on his watch. I feel like this man is not I don't feel like Biden is perfect in any way, and I certainly am disappointed in the fact that these are our choices. But I feel better with the people underneath Biden than I do anyone that Donald Trump could possibly pick at this point, because almost all of his staff basically have denounced him in some way, shape, or form. And all this other stuff he's done, which has only made his life worse, but he decided to make it worse for some inexplicable reason. I mean, like that defamation case, like he couldn't just shut up about that woman. And now he went back to court and lost again. It's like, he just, I don't feel like he's in any way a stable person to make choices. But again, I also understand
policy.
I also understand the perception about Joe Biden, and I myself have worried too. But I don't. I just with a ferocity, I dislike Trump so much.
That's what I think it is, Brad. I think people hate him so much that the good things he did, whether it was I don't know.
I'm not saying that in office he didn't do anything good, but I just don't think that I don't think he's an American leader. I don't think he's somebody that is nuanced enough in some ways. And I understand people's anger, and I definitely understand people wanting somebody that will go in and make a decision. But I mean, he wasn't able to do that before. Without changing the government and the country itself.
Well, that's listen, Brett, that's what I don't understand is people's anger. It's like, this is politics. Why do people hate so much? I mean, I see Biden and, falling, and he really seems senile. I don't know if you've seen some of the footage of him.
I've seen things that obvious that he's an older man. It's even if he's actually fine, he's slower than you would want your president to be. I get that. But I mean, on the same time, if America wanted to see everything, they could show clips of both of these guys saying things that didn't make any goddamn sense back to back.
Right. But when he's walking, well, I'm going to get
it. I get it. I think we've kind of done this. I want to get back to
the cool thing, Brett. Yeah. The cool thing is that we're communicating two people here. One's a left leaning, one's a right leaning. And we're communicating like normal fucking grown-ups. I'm not, I don't feel any anger. I mean, the one thing I will say of what, ever since I was a kid and started listening to Dead Kennedys and Black Flag and the punk rock of the early 80s, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were very political then.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't. But around that age, shit, I'm 15, 16, it was Jello Biafra and all these kind of guys. Jello, who hates Trump, by the way.
Yeah.
But he hated the Bushes too, and so.
And the Dead Kennedy. I mean, Jello was very anti-Reagan.
Yeah. Yes. And welcome to 1984.
But Jello Biafra is also kind of a nut.
He's a nut. He's a fucking nutbag, right? And that's why, because I hate the fact that he hates Trump so much, and says he's a Nazi and stuff, and then all this weird shit. But anyway, my point is back then, I kind of learned politics from punk rock or whatever, and so I've always been against war, and I always bought into the idea, especially after doing research, that war is generated from money and innocent people die from it, right?
Yeah.
And no one can argue the fact, and this is where I kind of just end my discussion about Donald J. Trump.
And that's fine. I think you and I could have a brilliant discussion, if we ever sat down and talk.
And Brett, we will. We're coming. Where are you at?
I'm actually very near Gary, Indiana.
Let's come to Gary, dude. I'll put you on the list. We'll hang out. But one thing about Trump is that in 36 presidents, and this is a fact, he's the first one. We weren't in war for those 4 years.
That's
granted, the pandemic did come.
Well, we were still wrapping up Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, and the way Biden pulled out, oh, whatever.
Yeah, that no, I'll hey, man, I'm with you. I'm with you that it's there was something that was missed there, and that was not a good way. It could have been worse.
That was
we
just
shouldn't have, we should have been out of Afghanistan so long ago.
Yeah, so
we knew what was going to happen. We knew the Taliban was going to take over.
Let's not skip over the fact that we had a president, first one in 36 years, and multiple, you know, like Obama's and Clinton's had 8 years, Bush's 8 years. Yeah. So, but 36 presidents. So that's like all the way back to Madison or somebody, that the first one didn't have war. And yeah. So what I love about that is, well, what that made me start on is, so I paid my house off, right? I live on 2 acres here in beautiful Southwest Florida, and I'm paying about, you know, $6,000 to $7,000 a year in property taxes.
Right.
Well, last year, you know, after God, however many years, I paid my house and property off, and then I found out, well, you still have to pay property tax. I'm like, well, why? I own it. Everything I do, I'm paying for whatever I own the land now. And yeah. They said, well, because that's the law. And so I went on and I did the research. That's the thing about the internet these days. You can just do the research and find out everything.
For the
right?
most part, yeah.
For the most part, or YouTube or whatever. You can fix anything. So I go on and I find out that the reason property taxes were instated in the first place was because of World War One. And so at the time,
yeah.
America wasn't the wealthiest country
right.
in the world. And so for us to get enough money to stop these horrible, you know, Germany, Russia at the time, you know,
yeah.
World War One, the only way we could get the money raised was by our rich folks in America. And the only people that owned property were the rich folks. So
right.
They implemented a property tax and put an amendment in the Constitution for property taxes only in times of war. And from then on, it's been war.
Yeah.
And so we pay property taxes. Well, so my question is, 4 years of Donald J. Trump with no war, then I'm owed 6 times 4 is 20. I'm owed $24,000, I feel, from the government, because I paid $6,000 a year, roughly $6,000-$7,000 a year in property taxes for 4 years of no war that we were involved in.
Right.
So that we shouldn't have to pay those property taxes. You know what I'm saying? And that's something that I just discover myself. I don't know.
I think that if that's definitely true. I mean, I will admit that finer details like the fine, like something like that, are probably normally outside my purview, because I don't know. I don't know what you would call me, but I would also like to, in Biden's defense, I mean, yes, we're supplying Ukraine, but we're not technically at war. So, you know.
Well, we are in over Hamas is bombing us, right? Why we put our ship? I don't get it.
But
we're not
technically deploying troops actively to fight combat, is what I'm saying. Not like Afghanistan, not like Iraq.
But we are. But it's over in Israel.
What I'm saying is, it's not that thing. It's not that thing where we're actually sending out Iraq.
We're not invading. We're not invading.
We have troops everywhere.
Yeah, that's another thing, dude, Brett. Like, we're the only country, I found out. We America, we're like the bullies or something. We went and put. We're the only country that has. Where they embassies, American embassies everywhere. Like, we bought land to build our American embassies on. But there's no Russian embassies. Like, I mean, there is some. But
well, there's got to be Russian embassies here. I mean, they have to be here.
Yeah, they have to be here and in a major kind of. But you can look this up. I mean, I'm not making it up. But you know, we're everywhere. Like, we're like the police.
That's World War II. That's because we kind of were the reason why, you know, Nazi Germany
was
succeed.
Defeated. Yeah, that's right.
You know, and we weren't going to do anything about it. We were going to stay out of it until, you know, Japan bombed Pearl Harbor supposedly. That's, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm saying supposedly that's the reason. If there's, you know, I don't know my history probably as well as maybe even you do.
And you never know, Brett. You know what I mean? We do know that there was no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq when we went and killed a million people there.
Iraq was definitely... See, this is the thing. Going to Afghanistan was right because of what happened. We were looking for Osama. That makes sense. Yep. But we weren't there to overthrow... Our purpose wasn't to overthrow the Taliban. It was to get Osama bin Laden. That became like just a secondary thing. And when Iraq... Man, that was... That's pretty much... Everybody blames Bush, but that's Cheney, man.
Yeah, I agree.
Cheney was the spearhead behind that shit. And he fooled every... Colin Powell look like an idiot by feeding him wrong information.
Yeah, you know, it's true. That's
and
true,
I,
man.
You know, and I gotta say that, you know, with the hindsight of time, my stance on George Bush has softened a bit. I mean, I don't think he was the greatest president, but I think he was a lot more of a compassionate man than people think. Anyways, let's go back to the tour, because then we can wrap it up. I have had you for a lot longer than you have probably thought we were in for. So
yeah,
but I appreciate it, man. I really do. I really appreciate you being honest and being able to accept my different point of view. And I'm glad that I could accept your different point of view and that we're still talking. You know, I think that's great because I think that's
too,
what
man.
More. And it's not even so much just people. I think social media has a way of throwing shit back in your face every 2 seconds. There's an algorithm for it. They're even said with Threads that even though Threat, you know, X has been kind of seen as, you know, the conservative side of social media now because of Musk and everything. And now Threads is shown as like the progressive side. But they found out there was a New York Times article or Washington Post article about the fact that Threads has some sort of algorithm which basically keeps spitting out things to progressives, making them, you know, about conservatives or whoever, making them, you know, angrier and angrier on purpose so that they interact more.
To divide us.
It's like
to divide us,
right? If we didn't buy into this, we wouldn't all be so angry. I mean, there's reasons to be angry about things, but there's not reason for this much venom.
It's true, man. It's true, and I feel like they're trying to divide the country, and I do feel, you know, that you know, ain't no wrong, ain't no right, as far as like Democrat. Or Republican. No. I was raised Democrat all my life. My parents were Democrats, you know. Yeah. But at the time in the 70s, particularly, the Democrats were the liberals, and that these were the people that, you know, at, like at time even in the late 70s, I was already in the music business playing, and so there was gay people around me. It's the music business, you know, and so I was always very liberal and always on the left, and you know. Welcomed, you know, different adversity, you know what I mean, in my life. And so I always felt that's what democracy and liberalism was about. And I hated Jello Biafra's thing, man. I hated Bush. I hated all the Republicans, man. Yeah. And all these years later, being a Republican, I don't know. I the only way I can say it happened is through those Obama years and the music business and watching industry happen and growing up as far as financially. I have a kid, a wife, all this shit all of a sudden, you know, and I'm like, wow. But let me just say, I think that also liberalism has changed, and it went just like just like there's the far right, these far right conservative jackasses, the far left conservative jackasses. But my problem is I feel like the far left jackasses own the industry that I work in. They own it. And so the wokeness is insane, dude. And I don't believe in erasing history because I feel like we learn from it. And so
absolutely.
You want to take down a statue of Andrew Jackson? Well, shit, what good is that going to do, really? It's going to hide the fact that maybe he was an asshole. Who knows? Yeah. They don't want to teach it to our kids anymore. And so You know, I think the divisiveness in this country, but again, I feel it's all going to end. I feel it's going to work itself out. If people like you and I on two different sides of the fence can sit here and talk like adults, that's all we need, man. If more people were like us, bro, you know, I feel like, and it's gonna happen. I hope
eventually, things have got to settle down or else we're all just going to burn.
Yeah. And then our country, and everything's going to fall apart. So, but we're, you know, it's the same thing with the music industry. You know, I feel like what's happened is I think people are going to get exposed. Like Puff Daddy's getting exposed right now for, you know, ripping off a lot of his artists or whatever, and abusing people with power, and which under that, the subgenres of sex and money, right? But it's all power. It's all power. And so I feel like it's going to be exposed just as all this, the swamp, they call it, all the political fraud and, oh my God, corruption with wars, especially this Ukraine war, and a lot of corruption, a lot of money being made. I don't think, like you mentioned earlier, like half the money we sent them, it's not going to weapons and shit. They're using it to do what we should be doing here, which is make, you know, home their homeless and build malls and build cities. And that's what they're using our $6 billion in 1 year. And so, you know, I feel like whatever's going to happen in this next year is going to be monumental, world changing, because it's going to expose. And I feel like it's all going to come out. And I don't mean just politically. I mean in this music industry too, because there's shady, shady people, and they're all billionaire elite people, you know. And they, I feel like, I know, I won't say any names, but I've met two billionaires personally and been on their Learjets and shit. I mean, Godsmack, you know, these circles happen, and you find yourself hanging out with like billionaire elite people and all. And I got to tell you, man, they're very weirdos. Like every fucking one of them, man. And it's like they once you get that kind of dough, maybe it changes you in ways that we, you and I, will never understand.
Yeah, I mean,
understand.
I think that's like, I mean, the two that I think about the most, and maybe these aren't, and maybe neither one of these are, you know, but I look at somebody like Zuckerberg or Musk, and I'm like, now Musk is a smart man, but I don't know what the hell he thought by buying Twitter, because it's just, it's kind of, it's thrown a lot of shit on the shit he did good.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's unnecessary. It's like a self-inflicted gun, you know, inflicted gunshot wound. I don't understand. Cause, and he's somebody I worry about, because he's got a lot of strong ties to China, which is really weird. And yet we're doing defense work with them, which is strange. But
yeah, my problem with Elon Musk and my problem with the world right now is cancer. And I lost my father. I lost my sister. She was 52, 53, I mean, and my dad was 63.
Wow,
and
man,
I lost my golden retriever to cancer.
Yeah.
And so there was three like main big things over the last 20 years. And so then Elon Musk comes out, this billionaire guy who I liked and thought super smart, super smart.
I thought, because I mean, I thought what he did with SpaceX, and I think Tesla is in its idea,
great.
These are great things.
But,
that he could,
well,
that
I'm
he's
saying
doing.
This. I'm saying this, Brett, with the SpaceX thing. I think that's brilliant too, but you're going to spend that kind of money to make man go to Mars, right?
Right.
And that's his big thing, make man go to Mars. So my point is, fix this planet first, man.
Right.
You know, like if I'm a billion, I got $100 billion.
Yeah.
I would go to every scientist and doctor on the planet. I go open up a $1 billion facility that houses them, give them each $100 million, change their lives forever, and get every scientist and doctor in the world, all
right,
on the same team at the same labs,
right,
and say, hey, I'm Elon Musk. I got $300 billion, cure cancer. And
right.
then we'll go to Mars, motherfucker. But first,
yeah.
Cure. I mean, have you met one person that didn't lose somebody from this horrible disease?
No, I've lost people too. Yeah.
Yes, everybody I know, dude. So why will we be worried? That's my only thing with Musk. It's like, why are you so worried about getting us off this planet? Let's fix this one first, and you got the resources. I don't. I could just watch my family pass around me. I don't have $100 billion to try and cure it. And so if I did, I wouldn't be thinking of fucking Mars. I tell you that. Yeah. So
well,
there's my
that's
little.
an example. That's a, see, this is what I was getting at with Musk is that here's a guy that's very smart, and he's even if we see those things as potentially wasteful compared to what we could be doing, he's taken any goodwill he's had by, you know, by stoking more fires that separate us by buying X and by turning it into something else. It's like, why would you purposely start more fires?
His thing was with the Twitter thing was freedom of speech, I guess. I guess
But everybody
he
was
thought.
already babbling about everything that they wanted to do before.
I get it. I get it. I'm with you, man. I thought it was weird. It was a weird move. That's why I say, that's why I made the comment before that I've actually met these billionaires and they're fucking weirdos. And somehow getting that kind of wealth and power. I mean, because look at Elon. He's a man that didn't even, he doesn't have mansions and all these cars and shit.
No, he's odd. He's an odd man.
But, you know, you can see the intelligence. His IQ must be off the charts. But
he's a brilliant person. There's no denying he's brilliant. He's also the dumbest brilliant person I've ever met.
encountered. They say Einstein couldn't tie his own shoes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yet he could figure out the theory of relativity. But so, you know, but he was no billionaire. But I will say this about Albert Einstein. I live in Fort Myers. And so that's Southwest Florida. It's about a couple hours down south of Tampa, right? And that's where Einstein's from, by the way. It's not from here. Not from here. But in the 20s, I think it was the 20s, maybe the 30s. Anyway, his house is here and you can tour it. You can like pay $15 or whatever and go in and see Edison's actual labs and shit. It's really cool. But what happened, I learned, was that him and Henry Ford, who were two at the time in the 20s or 30s, whenever this was, it was as if these guys were billionaires of the world. They were the elitists. And they came, and by the way, these two gentlemen came down to Fort Myers, Florida, and established the city. And they planted all the palm trees that still stand here were planted by Edison and Ford. They basically made Fort Myers, Florida, right? And so, again, even then, that kind of money makes people into weirdos. I don't know how to put it. It's. I don't know. If you or I, if we had $100 billion, would we turn into fucking weirdos? Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
But everyone I've met personally, they're just strange, man. And I know people think I'm strange, you know.
No,
but I'm
no,
like,
no.
Geez,
no, I get
I'm
it.
Like
There was that thing recently of talking about, I forget if it was just talking about social media in general, but the fact that, you know, people trusted tech because they felt like at the beginning that they were more pro human, everyday humans, you know, trying to tie everyone together and everything. But it turns out all that they wanted in the end was money.
Yeah, money.
And when you're on Earth and you're just programming yourself to pursue money above anything else, you don't care about anything. You just care about money. And that's what they've done to us, because all we sit there and do is there's all the status, and then we see people like, you know, doing this, doing that. We think we have to do that. I remember my grandmother had a job before, like, you know, they had kids. And then once they were going to have kids, she stopped working. My grandfather worked. You know, and like he was on a bowling league and they went to the Moose Club. And that was pretty much all they ever did. You know, they came home, you know, he came home every night, watched TV. Now everybody's always feels like they have to be doing special things and they have to be going everywhere. All that crap. You know, I mean, it's a whole thing. We could talk forever. Anyways, I want to get back to the Vibes tour. With Godsmack. You could hear me, right?
I got you.
Okay.
Yep.
I
got so, about literally no, five. I have no, 5 minutes.
I get it. And I'm sorry, we went off on a tangent.
No, that's okay.
But tell me about what the Vibes tour is and what fans can expect.
So the Vibes tour is a kind of an extension, I should say, of what we did in 2004. We released a record called The Other Side, and it was an acoustic record. And so this time, when it was actually my idea, we were having a great year rolling last year, but we beat the country up pretty good and hit everywhere multiple times, you know what I mean? So A markets, B markets, C markets, we got the C market world. And so this year we knew that, well, we can't go back out and hit these big rooms again because we won't sell the tickets. And, you know, everybody's seen us a couple times last year and seen the set, you know, all the songs, all the hits and shit. And so we're like, and I said, well, shit, why don't we do an acoustic tour so that we can still go out and play and, you know, not have the pressure of the big shows where they do theaters. And so he was like, that's a great idea. And so it came around that instead of being an acoustic show, though, Sully had the idea of making it just this vibey show where we play some cover songs. So like we do some Pink Floyd, some Led Zeppelin.
Nice.
And we put together like a killer like video screen with a bunch of trippy, you know, lava lamp and acid kind of mushroom vibe, you know, and do this set that's mostly acoustic, but we're not playing acoustic instruments. So like the dudes are playing electric guitars.
Yeah,
but it's just the softer tone stuff like Voodoo, Serenity, Spiral, these kind of songs we have that there's always a song like that that makes our record. On the four record, it was One Rainy Day, like blues, psychedelic blues rock kind of, you know what I mean?
And so
it's not technically like the Other Side tour, an acoustic set. However, it's, you know, we're not jumping around and blowing off pyro and being aggressive in any way. So this is a super mellow show. Fans can expect to come and basically it's a super mellow show that evolves by the end into a fun like jam thing where we at the end, because we play a bunch, there's only a couple covers in the set, but at the end then we can you know play covers, and we have like a list of 6-7 songs that we can pick a different one depending on the crowd every night. Like Sully might say, let's play Come Together, you know, or Time by Pink Floyd or whatever it is, you know? And
yeah.
And so it's a loose, intimate, small venue thing. We're playing like 2,000 to 4,000 seat, like theaters. And he also does a kind of storyteller vibe at a couple parts in the set where he, you know, breaks down just his, all these thoughts on like, you know, how important music is to us, and you know, still retaining some of that wonderment and awe that when we were little kids and started listening to music. And so we're trying to be, and it for me as a drummer, it's the coolest thing, and theaters have always been my favorite rooms, even over some stadium with 100,000 people or whatever. I've always liked the theater as a drummer because I feel like it is intimate, and I can see every face in that room, even the people up in the balconies. I can see you. You know what I mean? Where at the big shows, I can't see. Sometimes I'm on a 60 by 40 foot deck on these festivals, and I'm in the back, the drummer. So I'm 30 feet from the front of the stage, which is 15 feet from the front row. So, you know, it turns out I can't even make any kind of human connection to these people. I'm playing music for, and you know, that's a big part of being a performer is the human connection, right? And that energy that you feel off the crowd. And so with these theater shows, man, it's the favorite thing. This is the favorite tour that I've been on since probably the first time I joined Godsmack and just got, you know, put into this world of people that know your songs. Like when you're looking out and somebody's singing the words of your songs, hey, there's a magic and there's a power in that. That feels good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels good.
You're like, wow, they know my song. That's really cool. And so this Vibes tour, man, I tell all my friends and family, listen, it's a completely different set list, completely different band. We've added a couple of dudes. We put Chris and Timmy. Chris Takedo is a keyboardist and Timmy T is a guitarist. So we added some extra musicians in to fill it up. And so we can get away with playing songs like, dude, we do No Quarter by Zeppelin, which was always one of my favorite songs, you know, and we couldn't do that without, you know, extra musicians or whatever. But and then the freeform jam part of it, you know, if you've seen Godsmack in a rock metal personality, then you'll know that we mean business and it's a profession. Every night's the same because we try to be as perfect as we can be. You know what I mean? Sound like the record. We do not run tracks. We do not run tape or click tracks or any of that stuff. Never. We don't do that. And right. nothing against every band on the planet, by the way, that does it. nothing against them, but us and the Foo Fighters, we hold true to it. And Metallica, I don't think has any tracks either, but most of the bands do, and there's nothing wrong with that. But this even like solidifies it more that we're musicians up there, man, playing live music. So with what I said about our big shows being as perfect as possible, same set list, all that, this is the opposite of that. And so we feel like it allows us to play differently every night. We're like, if I go out 8 months out of last year on the big Godsmack tour, I pretty much played same everything every night.
Yeah.
Except for the little, we do a Battaglia de los Tamboros. It's like a drum solo thing. And I get little four bars to go off the top of my head each night in that part. And that's one point in the set. Where, you know, with this tour, shit, every song, man, you know, I might, if I think of something really cool, Phil or something, I can do it. And nobody looks at me weird. Like Sully doesn't turn around. What are you doing, dude? You know, because we went into this with, hey, improvisation is good. You know, if you're a great player, and you've been playing your instrument for 40 years, you can improv, man. And it's all good. But that said, you know, when they're coming to see the shows, the big show, they, you know, just like me, when I was going to see Van Halen or whatever, that kid, listen, I want it to sound like the record. You know, I want him I want him to play that drum fill like I learned it as a kid. You know what I mean? Like if you went to see Rush and they played Tom Sawyer and it went into dun, 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 and Neil Peart played a different fill, it wouldn't work, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, this Vibes tour, that's what I want to tell everybody. Come out. You know, it's a wine and mushrooms vibe and, you know, just hang out with us and dig it, man. It's really fun.
You know, I got to say that you're talking about as a drummer wanting, you know, getting that thing where you wanted to sound like the album. I, as a kid back when you were probably starting in your first bands, I was a kid on drums. Trying to play, you know, I was always playing with headphones to the albums, you know, whether it be The Who or, you know, The Police or whatever the hell. And yeah, man, it's, you know, it's such a fun thing to do. I even went back and went to a studio to rent.
Right.
And yeah, I know. I know.
I hate to cut you off.
No,
man.
I know you got to go.
I really do. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Hey, come to the show.
Yeah, let me wrap up and then I'll get in touch. So the Vibes tour is happening now. It's coming April 20th to the Hard Rock Casino in Gary, Indiana. Shannon, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate this, talking about all this stuff with you. I look forward to the show, man.
Thank you, Brett, man. You're really cool. I'll see you soon.
All right. Take care, man.
All right, buddy.
All right, see bye. Ya.